You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
We do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives from around the country who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. Critical Mass Coast to Coast is brought to you through a partnership of Critical Mass for Business with Executive Forums business owners in select markets across the United States. Executive Forums is an international organization committing to helping members take their business to the next level. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written about the peer group experience, and it's available for sale on Amazon.com. You can find it simply by typing in my name on Amazon, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. If you'd like to learn more about CEO peer groups, I would suggest you check out our website, www.executiveforums.com. Say, if you'd like to join the conversation today, if you are listening live on octalkradio.net, find the community chat room, log in with your Twitter ID, post your thoughts. My producer, Paul, whose voice you heard earlier on the show today, will be perusing those thoughts, and periodically he lets me know about some of them, and I'll try to bring them into the conversation if it's appropriate. But now it's probably time that we turn our attention to the radio show and bring on our first guest. And so I understand that Ian McClarty, coming to us all the way from Phoenix, Arizona, is on the line. Ian, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the show. I'd like you to explain to the audience a little bit more about your firm, Phoenix NAP, and what you do in your facility. I've been on your website. I'm quite impressed with the visuals and the way that you have in explaining your company, but I'd like you to spend a few minutes and kind of talk about your firm.
Sure. So Phoenix NAP is a multi-tenant carrier-neutral facility. We're basically like a condo for servers. Our biggest selling point is trust. The facility itself has to be very secure. There's a lot of important information and content that is stored in our facility that that is critical to online businesses, and that's in a nutshell that's what Phoenix NAP is.
And that security element comes through very clearly from the way you've positioned yourself virtually on your website. It's clear in the way that you can. I like your 3D navigation and the ability to see the facility. Quite modern. Looking and quite capable as far as what you've put into the facility. How did you get started in this co-location and hosting environment? What was the genesis for that?
Well, I personally have been in IT since back in the early 90s. Right after college, I worked for a small startup here called PrimeNet that went through several iterations, and I decided to get into engineering. So after college, went up to work for Micron. Then came back to IT after a couple of years and started with an organization and kind of worked my way up. We were a co-location user of a lot of space and power here in the Valley. And eventually we just hit critical mass and it made sense to start building our own facility and becoming a data center operator and an owner.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, let me ask you to back up for a second.
Sure.
Are you saying this company was born out of the need of another company?
Yes, it was, very much so.
And then you went out to secure other tenants for your facility as you grew your platform, I would assume.
Correct. We the same business drivers that we had were applicable and other people needed, so it made a lot of sense to actively start going after that customer base.
This has been a very active space, I have to believe, as data requirements for mid-market companies, small and mid-market companies and large companies as well grow, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. having a safe and secure, professionally managed site that, you know, is in the hands of professionals has been, quite a growth ride. Part of what we're going to be talking about is, you know, kind of how you and your management team and whole company has had to change to kind of adapt to the growth. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get to that in a minute. But before we do, I guess I'd like to ask you, as you've built the firm, would you share with us the guiding principle that you kind of used as you lead and build the firm to the future?
Sure. It's actually very simplistic. Number one, quality of life of the employee. Very, very important to me. Always constantly improving the quality of life of the employee. Number two, being respectful of corporate resources. And number three, to provide the best client experience possible. And making sure that things, those three things are in harmony to be successful.
And how did you... Now, this is not a trick question in the end, but just how did you kind of come to those three as the pillars of your guiding principle?
Well, we always had that from when we were a 10-person shop. We always had that principle. It wasn't exactly vocalized, but it was shown through actions, and it was a culture. We had to start vocalizing that principle again because of growth. We had a lot of rapid growth in the organization, going from 10 to several hundred people. And you start losing some of that corporate culture when it's not vocalized. So we're definitely making it an effort to vocalize that again and instill that in every employee.
You know, we've here at Executive Forums, we've done some work with our members across the entire international organization, analyzing how complexity of running a business from a CEO's perspective, how complexity of running your organization is positively correlated to the number of people that are in your organization. And we, regardless of what your basic fundamental business is, there's that correlation between the two. I'm certain that you must have seen the demands on you and the complexity of the decisions that you had to make kind of go along with the size of your organization, in addition to what you just kind of talked about as it relates to culture.
No, you're very, very right about that. No, it definitely. And it does get to the point where you hit critical mass and you're like, wait a minute, I need to instill an ideology in everybody that so that I can have those cycles back to look at the future, look at the vision, start looking at the marketplace and what's going on. I need those cycles back. So you have to trust your people more, and that trust has to be critical. There's nothing worse than a company where that trust is lost with the employee, and it's all about profit. That's very one-dimensional to me. That is not a driver.
You know, and that's easier said than done for many a business.
So.
You know, there's this concept of the business Bermuda Triangle. It's in a book called The Breakthrough Company, written by Keith McFarlane. And that's a five-year survey of about 7,000 Inc. 500 companies. And Keith was trying to find what were some common, if there were common characteristics of companies that were able to successfully kind of continue to grow past the time when, you know, you have that hyper growth that gets you on the Inc. 500 list. And one of the things that he had found is this thing called the business Bermuda Triangle, wherein as a company grows, if they don't instill the processes and if they don't invest in the plumbing, if you will, of the organization and kind of empowering their mid-level managers to make decisions, what you just said is so true. You end up burning a lot of executive cycles on things that should have become automatic, but because you didn't do it the first time, you have to go back and redo it. It's clear to me you've experienced that, learned the lessons, and implemented and allowed your organization to continue to grow, Ian.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's okay to make mistakes as long as you learn from them, right? And what I've seen in a lot of companies is they get to this point where they become the awkward teenager. And they never grow out of it. They always keep on going back and back and committing the same mistakes over and over again. And we were starting to do that. So I really have to step back and say, look, we need to become more of a young adult, a respectful company, and be very cognizant of what we're doing, not just to our clients, but even our vendors and our employees. And everything is intertwined. So we've definitely made that a priority in our organization.
As you may be aware, you've certainly heard it in the open for this show today. Critical mass is really born out of my very strongly held belief that collaborative thinking for peer executives can help them accelerate their business, alleviate some of the risk that's inherent in business, and improve really the quality of the life of the members in these CEO peer groups. That's why I was a member of one. That's I witnessed that firsthand. It had caused me years ago to leave the corporate world and do what I'm doing now. I'm wondering from your experience, Ian, if you could think of a time when you had either the benefit of or you could have used the benefit of a group of advisors or peers that could have given you some advice or did give you advice that helped you make a better decision.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's an easy one. Just building the data center itself, we had access to other CEOs and other people that had been through that, fortunately, and got some really good advice. And we're able to take some of the hard lessons learned from that and apply them. A quick example of that is the commission agent in a data center. Typically, that's the last person you hire in a facility. That's after the fact. That's the person that comes in and buddy checks every single piece of capital equipment and make sure that it all works together, make sure that it meets all the manufacturer's specs. That's the first person we hired in our environment because we got such good advice from other data center operator and owners that saying, look, if we had to do it all over again, this is the one thing we would do. And so we listened to that. We're like, okay, we'll be fools for not listening to somebody that's been through this a couple of times and taking their advice.
Wow, that's a great... You know, I love stories like that because I think of a series of dominoes, mm-hmm. you know, and that insight tips a bunch of dominoes behind it that if you hadn't been given that advice, you've never even had that sequence of events happen.
No, and it would be a very different data center at this point, and it would have been a very stressful project. It was a project that was busy and it required a lot of cycles and resources and love and attention, but it definitely was not stressful.
Wow. You know, one of the other, I'm referring back to the Breakthrough Company by Keith McFarland, one of the other things that he had found, so in the end of it, out of 7,000 companies, he uncovered 9 companies that exhibited 6 consistent qualities and that allowed them to continue to grow. Intuit was one of the companies that he had profiled in his book. One of the things that he talks about is that of the 6 companies, of the 9 companies, excuse me, 4 of the companies, their CEOs were in some type of a peer group. And he thought it was actually one of the contributing factors. He calls it scaffolding, but this ability to get outside your own business and learn from the business Sherpas who've kind of been up the mountain before can really help accelerate and relieve some of the things that happen in a business when you have to learn them through experience.
No, and these are things you just can't learn in a vacuum. I mean, you have to go through you have to go through all. And you're talking about people are complex systems to begin with, right? And now you're talking about a complex environment. You're talking about complex. You're talking about a lot of dancing landscapes, basically, that you got to deal with, right? And people learn these things the hard way. And for others to be able to tap into that knowledge, I think that's very critical. I agree with you 100%, by the way, on that.
I find it interesting because I've interviewed over 300 business owners on Critical Mass in the 2 years we've been doing the show. And one of the beliefs that has solidified since doing this show is if your business is challenging already, but if your business is either a technology business at its core or foundationally dependent on technology, I believe the complexity of running that business is greater than a lot of other businesses because of the rapid nature of change that happens by virtue of being in the technology business. Do you know what I mean? It just makes your decisions much more important and shorter lasting. They don't last as long as maybe some other businesses.
Yeah, you're right. And you have to basically be able to weather through any mistakes. That's the biggest part about it, right? Because you hit the nail on the head. It is very rapid evolving. If you make a mistake, you need to be able to weather through it. Even if it was a hard decision, you have to be able to weather through it. And having a proper infrastructure, having the personnel that believe in you, having all these pieces, having vendors that believe in you, having clients that believe in you, that's critical. It all has to flow.
So let's talk about a challenge that you're facing right now in your business and the ideas or actions taking to mitigate and contain that challenge.
Definitely. The challenge right now we're going through is just instilling this ideology back into the employees and having them believe it. That is definitely a challenge. Now, I am very cognizant that my actions, right, especially right now, are being watched by everybody. so I have to not just practice what I have to practice what I preach, right? In a sense, and that's becoming very critical. And I'm very cognizant of every single move I make, everything that comes out of my mouth, every action I take, and now I'm starting to see some good returns from that. It's definitely a time investment into the employee back that we're taking as an organization.
So, would you be comfortable giving me an example here on Critical Mass, the radio show, maybe of how you're seeing some positive validation
what you're doing
is sticking?
Yeah, definitely. Sales is a good example. Historically, a lot of animosity between upper management and sales for whatever reasons. That in itself is a very complex subject, right? But just one critical thing that we did as an organization was reset that. We went back to sales, and we had to reset the relationship. Look, guys, let's reset expectations on both sides. Let's reevaluate the relationship. Let's really make it work, right? We ended up apologizing to our personnel, right? Look, we set you up to fail in a sense. We set the system to fail you. Taking some of that ownership and accountability on the management side, it was critical. And now the rapport with sales is improved. The rapport between sales and other departments has improved. Operations and sales are getting along. I mean, good ideas are flowing back and forth. This is conflict, but nothing wrong with conflict as long as it's done in a respectful manner, where there is a true respect on both sides, and people are able to listen and learn from each other's mistakes. And that's the kind of environment that we're growing into right now. And I must say, when something out of control comes up, or a fire, the staff is able to handle it as a team a lot better, and get that flow information going a lot better. And the clients are seeing this now. That's a trickle effect that goes back to the client. The vendors are seeing this right now, and that is adding such value that it's immeasurable. Honestly, I think that will push our organization to the next level.
That is such a critical point that you made too. In my experience, when it touches the customer, if it's a positive experience, change. The multiplier on that is huge to the business. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that, if it's a bad thing and it touches the customer, it can really significantly – it can have a greater impact than the instance in isolation, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah. I agree 100%.
Okay.
And it's all about the client experience. It's a client experience not just from the standpoint of the sales side, but all the way up to operations as far as provisioning of that, supporting of that, and even accounting, especially accounting, right? Everything has to be in harmony all along the way. If there's a poor client experience along the way, it's damaging. And a lot of that is shown not by a trust factor that is lacking between management and the employee. That carries across all the way to the client. If the trust is not there between the employee and the employer, you see that trust breakdown all the way to the client, affecting the client.
Yeah, in so many ways, especially when, on occasion, we've had our clients analyze what we call the touch points with their customer. And sometimes it has really been a fun exercise because we ask them on occasion to bring in your quotes, bring in your invoices, bring in a sample of an email, do those. And because our belief, your brand and your reputation is the aggregate of all the customer touch points from the customer's perspective. It's how you act with them. If they're not all on the same page, you can really send some mixed messages to your customer. And many times, the CEO isn't even aware of some of those communication touch points because they've long past moved to other areas of focus within the business.
Exactly. No, I agree. I agree 100% with that. And that's a shame, too.
Yeah. I wonder if you would be comfortable, Ian, sharing a painful lesson, or at least a lesson, a valuable lesson, business lesson that you learned it came from, if not a painful, a difficult experience?
Yes. So, and without giving too many specifics on the client name and everything, definitely. One of the most disheartening things you can do to an employee is set them up to fail. And this is what I mean by that. Our sales staff, for example, I'm going back to sales, this is just because it's low-hanging fruit for me. The communication was so poor between operations, accounting, and sales that they would fight tooth and nail to bring in an account, sell them on the service, and it was definitely something we could provide. Then it would go to operations, and it was such a poor handoff that the client was already soured. Then it would get as far as going to the accounting department, and there was such a breakdown as far as what they were going to be billed, what was going to happen, that the client was disheartened. Even though the client got the product they were promised, that didn't matter. The experience was so rough all along the way that they just didn't want to do business with us anymore. And those are lessons that I don't want to repeat again. So setting proper client expectations, just being upfront, being honest, making sure that there's critical communication between all the different departments involved, making sure the messaging is proper from the marketing side, making sure everything just kind of flows together, and there's a buddy check all along the way. And when there's a failure, that we analyze that failure and we don't repeat it again, because it's okay to make mistakes, just don't make them again, right?
Right.
Those are the things that we're learning very well as an organization, getting better and better at doing, at surpassing.
And that is, we kind of talked about in the open, how the organization has had to change and grow as your organization, as the firm has grown. And in those times of hyper growth, it really does expose a lot of gaps that may be inherent in the system that at a slower time you don't see them, they're not as evident. But I can only imagine in your business, as it was growing and you were adding customers and platforms and power and all the other things that are going along with that, just that's a lot of chatter to have to deal with as the leader of the business, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. There's definitely a lot of chaos, right?
Right.
Fortunately, fortunately and unfortunately, I have thrived in chaos. But one thing it's good and bad, right? Good because we are able to surpass it. Bad because we shouldn't even be in chaos in the first place. There are ways to mitigate chaos. All chaos is just saying you're not in control. So stepping back and taking some ownership and looking at the situation and saying, look, let's be in control of our own destiny here. There's a lot of things that companies can control that they're just not aware of.
Well, I'd like to finish two quick questions. Well, a quick question at the end, and then this one just to give you a chance to pause and think about and then answer. I know that the firm has had rapid growth, but I'm wondering, for the future, where do you see as the next kind of opportunity for growing the firm, and what's going to be the impact if you're able to successfully leverage that?
Oh, that's easy. Cloud for us is going to be the next business driver. Infrastructure as a service is becoming critical to companies. The CapEx, especially from small businesses all the way to the largest enterprises, CapEx costs are killing companies right now. We're heavily focused on cloud and cloud infrastructures, and are developing a lot of those technologies in house to better tie multiple vendors together. That is going to be our biggest driver. I would say towards the end of this year and next, that is going to reshape our organization as a whole as far as what we do, what we offer. It definitely will put us in a different league.
Well, the promise of cloud computing has been around for a while, and I am of the distinct impression that its time has now come, that the technology and the pipelines and everything, the investment, it's here. It's really here to realize some exponential growth, and especially for mid-market companies who need the capabilities but don't, like you said, want to have the CapEx burden. So that's great. I'd like to have you back sometime, Ian, if you're willing to come back as my guest, and because, small and mid-market CEOs listen to the show, maybe we could talk a little bit more about cloud, because frankly, there's still a lot of confusion about, if you're not in the technology field, you're still trying to come to grips with what this means versus the traditional IT business model.
Oh, I would love to. I'd love to. I love the educational aspect of it. It's unfortunate term.
Someone would like to learn. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. I was just saying it's unfortunately a term that's very much misused, but I think the way we're defining cloud and some of the things that we're going to do are going to make a lot of sense to people. It should be common sense.
When Microsoft is out paying big bucks for commercials selling cloud computing, the time has come.
Oh, the perfect storm. That's what it is right now.
All right. So I'm going to work with Steve Pincus, and we're going to find a time to have you back on the show, and we're going to do a little more technical discussion on – not too technical, but for a CEO's perspective about cloud computing, okay?
Oh, yeah, I would love to.
Okay. Well, before I let you get off the phone, how would someone virtually, online, find out more about you and your firm?
Well, PhoenixSnap.com, that's where our website is, but we're also on LinkedIn. My name, Ian McLarty, and also PhoenixSnap has a LinkedIn profile. And it's relatively easy to find, you know, find us on from a web presence standpoint.
All right, phoenixnap.com. It's worth the visit just to see the money that you've put into the way you've set up your site. I enjoyed spending the time that I did earlier kind of doing the basic research for your appearance on the show. So, Ian, thank you for the time. Thanks for being a friend at Critical Mass Coast to Coast, and welcome to our ever-extending business community.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day.
All right, goodbye.
Take care.
And I will deliver on that promise, ladies and gentlemen. We will have Ian McLarty back to talk about cloud computing, because I know a number of you would like to learn a little bit more from an unbiased kind of educational perspective. We're going to be talking to our second guest in a minute. First, let's take this break.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. Say, if you would like to possibly join the conversation off the octalkradio.net webpage, find a community chat room, log in with your Twitter ID, post your thoughts. Paul, our producer, will check them and bring them to my attention, and possibly I'll bring him into the conversation with our second guest here on Coast to Coast today, Fred Katona of Bulldozer Digital. Fred, coming to us all the way from beautiful Philadelphia. Welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Thanks, Rick, for having me.
I'm excited to have you on the show. Part of what we talked about is your marketing systems, and the marketing systems that we're going to talk about here today are also the marketing systems that helped to launch Priceline.com and others. So I'm sure there's enthusiasm in our audience to kind of hear what you have to say.
Well, I hope I can share some secrets that makes everybody's business life a little bit better, easier, and you know, and more profitable.
So help me to understand Bulldozer Digital. Tell me from your perspective, the firm, what makes it different, and you know, kind of what are the service level and performance? What do you do in the business?
Sure, Bulldozer Digital uses radio, national radio advertising to promote mainly e-commerce companies, but almost all different types of companies. The difference between what we do, we're an advertising company that focuses on radio because it's pervasive. There's 10,000 radio stations, so it reaches the whole population of the United States. The digital part is we drive, once a commercial runs, a 60-second commercial runs, that commercial usually drives a person either to a phone room or to a person's website. When they get to the website, then they're introduced to the person's social media presence, and they're also invited to partake of some type of free gift, in which case they exchange their email for the free gift. And what that does is for the same dollar they spent on radio advertising, now they've created a relationship with the person. Whether they buy or they don't buy immediately is not that important. The important part is that people purchase from you when they get to know you, like you, and trust you. And you can't do that merely on a 60-second commercial, but you can do that through emailing various good information, and you can do that by inviting a person into your social profile and giving them more good, beneficial information.
You know, those three elements, Fred, are, I think, so simple to understand and so logical, but many times forgotten.
There's no. We live in a world now where people are naturally distrustful. So you, as a company You're either selling, everybody's in marketing, they're either selling a product, a service, or themselves. In this world, people want to do business with people who they know, who they like, and who they trust. And the more they hear you, the more they get to know you, the more they get to like you, the chances of them purchasing from you what you have becomes greater. And we put a name to it. We call it digital convergence marketing, where all your advertising efforts push down a funnel to a sale and beyond.
Analogy has really allowed, I think, especially social networks and social media, it's really enabled companies to help clients and prospects get to know them and hopefully like and trust them, but certainly get to know them, because you can share so much information freely that you can find people who have an affinity for who you are as a group of people, which is what, you know, companies are really a collection of people.
That's correct. Twitter and Facebook are changing the world. It's called the social network, not just a network. The social part is that I'm getting to know Rick. Rick is getting to know Fred. We're doing it right now with this little interview. But maybe when I leave this interview, Rick will go on to my Facebook page or go to my website, and he will get to see pictures of me, maybe even videos of my family. So you and I are becoming more socially integrated, which is the perfect environment for us to do more business together.
We don't talk politics on this show. We talk business. But I have to say, the things that have happened in the Middle East, I think to some degree, social networks have played a part in enabling people to move towards freedom, if that's what's happening in the Middle East. So I can't understate how powerful I think this whole technology is in enabling business owners to create a voice in the marketplace that's transparent and genuine.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, from the marketing standpoint, we launched Priceline. I founded the advertising company that launched Priceline and Free Credit Report, from startup to a valuation of over $20 billion. I did that just using 60-second radio commercials. Today, we go beyond the commercial into the social world. We reinforce the commercial with social marketing and email marketing. Email marketing is merely if you see a message from me on your email and you know me, the chances of you opening that email are greater, because you know Fred Katona is going to send you some more valuable information. He's not going to try to sell you something. He's just sending you more valuable information, and I'm getting to know and trust Fred, and I look forward to this information. It builds a community of trust and a community that if we ever get to meet one another face-to-face, we feel as though we already know each other.
I had a guest on our radio show who's a speaker, and he was using social media to talk with the people who were going to be at a speech that he was giving in Denver. He's in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Literally, he told me the story, I think here on the radio show, or when maybe we talked prior to the show, that when he got to the conference and he was introduced as the speaker, as he was kind of working through the audience, he had a lot of people that felt that they already knew him, liked him, and sort of were his friend, and he had never met him before. It's just because he put time and effort into kind of preparing and talking about and connecting with them before he actually physically got to the location.
Yeah, that's the perfect environment to sell. But let's not, I mean, we have to be direct here because we're business people and we're marketers. Using radio and radio marketing directly with a great message, I sold $50 million in airline tickets in 1 week. To be truthful and direct, you're not going to do that with social media marketing. But social media marketing is just a part of your marketing system. it perpetuates that customer. In other words, maybe we sold an airline ticket that week to Mr. and Mrs. Jones. Well, they just did that off of a radio commercial. Because I've given Mr. and Mrs. Jones the opportunity to know, like, and trust me on my website and with my emails, I'm hoping that Mr. and Mrs. Jones come back sometime again and buy more airline tickets from me, because they'd rather buy from, everything being equal, Mr. and Mrs. Jones would rather buy from somebody they know and they like and they trust.
So you have developed your marketing system. I think digital convergence marketing is your term for it. How does that apply? Many of the clients and people that listen to Critical Mass Coast to Coast are mid-market business owners and CEOs. Mid-market, mm-hmm. Fred, you know, several million dollars to not quite $100 million, kind of in that range. So could you spend a little bit of time and maybe share for those size companies, you know, how your digital convergence marketing and the tools and programs that you have would be applicable and appropriate for them?
Sure. First of all, it's very easy. You know, digital convergence marketing, it may sound like a big term, but there's nothing in the system that anybody with normal practices, normal intelligence, you don't have to be overly savvy, over intelligent, you don't have to be a geek. Anybody can use the system. And it's easy and it's simple. And here's the advantage. And I do this when I speak a lot of times. I say to people, you know, in my business, we write 60-second commercials, and then we buy media time either locally or all over the country. Now, I need to find a message to convey your big idea. So I have to take your big idea, I have to convert your big idea into a mass marketable message that people understand, and then I have to distribute your idea. The hardest part is taking your big idea and translating it into a mass marketable message. I'll give you an example. For Priceline, we didn't say come and buy airline tickets for less money. We didn't say we're the cheapest airline tickets you can buy. We said this, name your own price for an airline ticket. It was an empowering statement. We didn't hit you over the head and say, do this, do that. We said, name your own price for an airline ticket. And that was the message that sent that company through the roof. With a free credit report, I tested that 4 times and it didn't work. The 5th time, I changed the message just slightly. And the message was, run a free credit report on yourself. And it took off and went through the roof. So what we say in our business is there is a message that can make you do whatever I want you to do. We may not know the message yet, but using radio, you're not going to go broke finding the message. Once you find the message on radio, you can then go to TV or print, or you can go to the internet. But with radio, you can change your message every day. You can produce your 60-second commercial for very little money, hundreds of dollars, not thousands of dollars. You can buy a test spots, you know, locally to test whether your message is a good message or not. And once you have your message, if it works, then you can do a small national test. If that works, you're rich. Because you can take your message and you can blow it out to the whole United States in 48 hours. If you're a local person, a local organization or a local business, it's even simpler because you can keep testing your message locally until you find the right message to get the most response. And you can either drive them to a phone number or drive them to a little microsite. These things used to cost $30,000 to build. Now you build them for $1,500. And you have yourself a serious business just using radio and a microsite or a little phone room. It's that simple.
So my producer, Paul, has sent me a question. Possibly it came from a listener who, you know, kind of came through the community chat room. I'll ask you, have you seen and analyzed internet radio as a possible vehicle for what you do?
Yes, I have. I just tested it. I shouldn't say I just tested it. I just used it about 3 weeks ago again. Here's the good and the bad about internet radio. The good part is that, remember, people are listening to internet radio while they are on their computer. So it's really simple for them to just click on your message or your offer or your advertisement. Well, what that means is, because it was so easy, that lead is a weak lead. It's not a very strong lead. Versus terrestrial radio, which means they have to pick up a phone or they have to go to their computer and type in a website and then opt in. That's a stronger lead. It's worth, those people are more likely to purchase or buy what you're selling. Internet radio is convenient, it's fast, and it's really inexpensive. We use it in conjunction with terrestrial radio, and we use it in conjunction with satellite radio. One of the good parts about internet streaming radio is you know exactly how many people at this minute are listening to your commercial. So it's a very measurable type of medium, and we do use it, but it has its limitations.
I always look for learning moments on Critical Mass Coast to Coast, you know, chances to impart knowledge across to the audience. And you just, you certainly gave it to me, and I would assume to also others who are listening, because the idea that because it's convenient and easy, it's a weaker lead is perfectly logical to me. But frankly, if we hadn't had this conversation, Fred, I might not have made the connection of those two principles. But because of the way you said it, I do now. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Where do you see the opportunity for growth for Bulldozer Digital coming from here in the future? And as you capitalize on it, what's it mean to the firm?
Well, I think what we try to do is we're the fusion of offline and online marketing. And we like radio because of the reasons I mentioned. It's fast, it's inexpensive, it reaches the whole population. And people love it because they like listening to their local news on the radio. We capture them in their cars. I mean, the average person, I think, spends 72 minutes a day in their car. You know, you have a captive audience for a long time. The average person listens to radio 19 hours a week. We don't think that's going to change that much. You know, because people like listening to their local news, their local disc jockeys, their local sports. And we just think, because not very many people are using radio to market, that it is the Wild West. I mean, you can really, really take advantage of a situation, because radio advertising is extremely inexpensive, and you can dominate either your local area or the United States using radio. A lot of people, here's another fact a lot of people don't know. If I'm buying a radio spot in Philadelphia, that radio spot could cost me $100. If I buy that same spot in a national package, that radio spot costs me about $7 or $8. So if you test something locally and you say, it almost paid out, but it didn't pay out, when you go to national, you're going to get 10 times, 5 to 10 times the amount of activity for the same dollar that you spent. So it's something that really shrewd marketers need to take heed. And And I always say, people look at me when I talk about, you're just in radio. Well, you know, it's not just radio. It's radio and the internet. I said, but listen, this isn't something that this isn't a theory of mine. This isn't something that I know that you could do. This is something that I do every day, and I have the record for the most amount of response, the most amount of revenue, the most amount of personal wealth ever created on radio with a simple 60-second radio commercial. So I think for the business people listening out there that they should consider that a very fast and effective method for selling or promoting what they have.
I'd like to ask you if you could share how people would find you and your firm, since you're right, they're probably at their computer right now as they're listening to us. If not on a smartphone, they can certainly surf the internet. How do they find you, Fred?
They can go to bulldozerdigital.com, and on there, they can download a free white paper that talks about everything, Rick, that you and I just talked about. There's also a store on there that they could buy. I have some CDs that I've done on how to do radio marketing properly. And, you know, I think that is a good first step. Whether they hire us as their advertising company or another advertising company, it really doesn't matter. They need to know the fundamentals, and all the fundamentals are right there.
You know, I love this conversation, Fred, because it never ceases to amaze me how quick people would like to claim something is now obsolete or no longer of value. You know, that disruptive technology for whatever is going to totally make it irrelevant. And what I find to be the case usually is some really smart entrepreneurs figure out how to take that and turn that into an opportunity, and they then show why what other people saw as a disadvantage is actually and truly an advantage by capitalizing on it. And it sounds like that's what you're doing for your clients using internet radio tied to social media.
Well, Rick, what you've just done right now, I mean, just a piece of information that you and I have talked about over the last 25 minutes is it could be life-changing for companies out there. I mean, think about it. Just using radio, Jay Walker, the founder of Priceline, not using TV, not using the internet at all, 95% radio, 5% print, became the 42nd wealthiest man in America. That his personal wealth was $10 billion. All right, so Rick, by interviewing me here, just gave a tip that could start the crescendo of business for people that are really not just hearing us, but are listening to us. And that's what I hope happens.
Me too. And I appreciate you being willing to spend the time. I thank Ken for connecting with you and having you on this episode of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. So, Fred, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. And thanks for being a friend of our radio program.
Thanks a lot, Rick. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. It really went by quickly. Appreciate your time. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience, I hope you've enjoyed this version of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I hope it helps you to make better decisions, and I think on both fronts, both guests have given you learning moments to reflect upon and possibly take action. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our show. Smart Business Magazine is the management journal that provides insight and advice for you, the top decision maker. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. And if you'd like to learn more about Critical Mass for Business or Renaissance Executive Forums, then you can check out executiveforums.com. And if you're listening live, then I strongly encourage you to stay around, because there's a fascinating show following me here on octalkradio.net. It's my business partner, Doug Gefeller, hosting this week's edition of The Coaching Perspective. I'm sure going to be tuning in to listen to it. So until the next show, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, only on octalkradio.net.